you know, no matter how people feel about this issue, I think it's inescapable to sort of see what's going on in Orlando and the NBA's impressive show of support for the Black Lives Matter movement, while at the same time, they have a $5 billion enterprise that was directly operating in a, you know, in a place like Xinjiang. Xinjiang is basically the epicenter of one of the worst human rights catastrophes in the world right now. For some people, there's an element of hypocrisy there.
That's ESPN investigative reporter Steve Faneru. For the past 10 months, he and his brother, Mark Faneru-Wada, have been digging into the complicated issue of the NBA's business in China. Today, the results of their investigation, which uncovered allegations of abuse and human rights concerns at three NBA-sponsored academies there, and raises questions about the NBA's future in one of the world's biggest basketball markets. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, August 6th. This is ESPN Daily. Steve, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks, Pablo. Thanks for having me.
You and your brother Mark just reported this story that is honestly as eye-opening as pretty much any feature I've read at ESPN. And it's about allegations of abuse at three NBA training academies in China. And all of this takes place inside the broader context of China's massive human rights violations. So, first question, what prompted you to start looking into this stuff in the first place?
Well, Mark and I, we saw, like everyone, Daryl Morey's tweet, and more than that, the impact of that tweet, which I think we both felt was just astonishing.
Friday, Daryl Morey, the Rockets GM, tweeted, "Fight for freedom, stand with Hong Kong." The backlash was swift and fierce. Morey was attacked on Chinese social media. By Saturday, Tencent, the NBA's broadcast partner in China, had announced it was taking Rockets games off the air.
You know, that a Houston Rockets general manager could tweet out his support for Hong Kong protesters, and it would lead to a huge reaction from the Chinese government, one, taking the NBA off of state TV, ultimately costing the league hundreds of millions of dollars. And then, of course, setting off a whole political tempest in the United States over sort of the role of U.S. corporations that are operating in China. And so we just started kicking it around. And one of the things we thought about is that how little actually we all know about the NBA-China relationship. I mean, it's huge. It's a NBA China, which is a separate entity from the NBA, is a $5 billion enterprise. And we know almost nothing about that. So the original idea was just to sort of look into that and see, you know, whether there was a story there. And if so, what it is.
How long has the NBA actually been in China?
Well, they've been, you know, the stories go back decades, with David Stern literally going to China with videos of the NBA and trying to get to anyone and everyone to listen, knowing that that market was potentially huge for the league. The relationship really, from a business standpoint, it really didn't take off in earnest until the arrival of Yao Ming in the United States.
Bryant underneath to Shaq, rejected at the rim by Yao Ming.
When he was playing in the league, that connection between China and the United States really created a huge market for NBA basketball in China that began to monetize itself.
Well, that's the word underdog I just learned a couple of days ago. It's just like an NBA say, where amazing happens.
And so when Yao retired in, I think it's 2011, that sort of led to, you know, the search for the next Yao. Because it's just impossible to overstate how important it would be to the market to find another player of that magnitude who could continue to stoke that kind of interest. And so finding another Yao, finding the next Yao, has been an obsession for a lot of people over there.
Yeah, it's sort of common at this point in the normal NBA offseason to see players, superstars like LeBron, on down the line, make pilgrimages almost to China, and they're greeted like the Beatles. I mean, it's insanely, insanely popular. But when you talk about that viewership and that customer base, is there a way to put a magnitude on just the scale of that?
China is basketball crazy. From a viewership perspective, it's just huge now. It's a market four times the size of the U.S., and basketball is the thing. So, you know, I think the other thing that's, you know, that's important is that because of the technological advances, we're seeing so many different ways to take advantage of that demand. So ESPN, for example, has a huge presence in China. ESPN has a partnership with Tencent, which is a huge media company. You know, there's a whole effort going on now to try to figure out different ways to slice and dice the market when it comes to basketball, but particularly NBA content.
So back in 2016, the NBA has this goal of trying to find the next Yao, and they're trying to cultivate more talent, more candidates for that sort of mythical title. How did they actually go about developing and finding those players?
Well, it's been sort of an evolution. Before they initiated their training academy program in 2016, they had already begun to work with the many private academies, private basketball academies that already existed there. And basically, it was a sponsorship agreement almost. The academy was paying the league something like $200,000 a year. And it was basically enabled the academy to stamp the logo on the facility. And also it gave the league a real connection inside that academy to look for prospects. They began to formalize it in 2016 with these three academies. Basically, the plan was that they were going to try to go after elite players, as they do in other countries. This is not actually unique to China. As the NBA, as part of its international presence, is setting up elite clinics to look for international players all over the world now. But China was an obvious place to begin to expand that. So they set up three academies in different cities. And then the most controversial of the three was in a far western province of Xinjiang, where huge human rights problems have been playing out for years now.
So in those three academies in particular, who was running them and what was that org chart like?
So this is sort of where the problems started for the league. Instead of setting up a private academy, they decided that they were going to embed the academies in the Chinese government sports schools. So the Chinese government, as the Soviet Union used to do and as Cuba does, the process of finding elite athletes is very highly organized and it's very top down. And so you have the Chinese sports ministry and then provincial sports ministries and then local sports ministries. And they're all run by the government. And elite Chinese athletes are essentially enrolled in these schools. And so the NBA decided what they would do is they would bring over American foreign coaches and embed the coaches in these schools. And the idea, as they explained to us, was that you would have existing infrastructure, you would have access to what they believed were elite players. That would sort of give them an easy way to get started. And so that's what they did. But what it did, and we heard this really uniformly from people who were, you know, intimately knowledgeable about the program, it put them basically under the direction of the Chinese government. So their Chinese partners were selecting the players. Their Chinese partners were setting up the training programs. And so the coaches were basically as one of them put it, we were basically working for the Chinese government. So you had a situation where the NBA personnel were basically working for the Chinese.
And so working for the Chinese government itself is a shocking kind of notion. But you mentioned earlier the province of Xinjiang. That's especially problematic as a location right now. And so for those unfamiliar, could you describe the human rights situation going on there?
Right. So Xinjiang is basically the epicenter of one of the worst human rights catastrophes in the world right now.
With so much attention on China's response to pro-democracy protesters in Hong Kong, tonight China's treatment of a mostly Muslim ethnic minority, the Uyghurs, is in the spotlight. More than a million Uyghurs are believed to have vanished into what the U.S. government calls internment camps.
The Chinese government has been carrying out a sort of a systematic wave of repression against the local Uyghur Muslim population. They've rounded up more than a million Uyghurs and placed them in essentially re-education camps, barbed wire re-education camps, in which they've basically been arbitrarily detained and placed in these camps. In addition to that, most of Xinjiang, including Urumqi, where the city where the academy was located, it's under an enormous security surveillance system. Police stations and cameras everywhere, random checks of identification, phone monitoring everywhere. And so one of the things that happened was you had Americans living in this environment, and they, like everyone living out there, would end up getting swept up in this one way or another.
Did the NBA know that context that you just meticulously laid out?
They told us no, they did not. We interviewed Mark Tatum, the deputy commissioner who oversees international operations. And he said they were not aware of the political situation in Xinjiang or the security concern. It's honestly, it's a little bit difficult to understand. The camps were not reported until, I believe, in the middle of 2017. But the violence and the response, the heavy response to the violence has been going on for decades, really. And so it's hard still, I think, to understand sort of how the NBA wouldn't have been aware of, you know, sort of what they were getting into. You know, I think that their position is that Xinjiang is a, you know, it has a history of good basketball out there. The CBA team in Urumqi is historically good and popular. Uyghur players have come out of there, talented Uyghur players. And so that seemingly was the logic behind it. But how they could be so oblivious to what was going on out there is not really clear.
Coming up, let's talk about what you learned about what actually was going on inside the basketball academies and the concerns it raised for American coaches working there.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Steve, the human rights abuses that you just described for us in Xinjiang, that's all a matter of public record. But what wasn't public before was what was happening inside these academies themselves. What did you discover about the actual training and coaching going on inside these basketball camps?
Well, you know, it's probably really interesting. So we were interested in the Xinjiang part of it because that question that was already we've been talking about, like, how the heck could they put a training academy in the middle of this situation? That was our central question at the beginning. And then, you know, what is it like for the people who are working in that training academy? But when we began to talk to people who were familiar with the entire academy program, we began to hear all these other stories about the way the players were being treated. Notably that the Chinese partners who were working with the NBA were abusing the players who were in the program. And so you had situations where for discipline, the Chinese coaches were hitting kids, throwing balls at their faces, kicking them. And that this was relatively routine in all three locations. So that was one thing. The other thing was that none of the kids, from what they could tell, were actually in school. So you had 14, 15, 16-year-old kids who were being trained by the NBA weren't actually getting any formal schooling. And this was not only shocking to the American coaches, it also contradicted what Adam Silver had announced when the program was launched, that education was going to be central to the holistic approach that the NBA said it was going to take to training these players. And so they reported that in various forms to NBA China leadership in Shanghai and to try to see if anything, they might be able to do about it.
Steve, you rely here on the testimony of people who were working at the camps, Americans who had been there. What was it like reporting this? And obviously, you were not able to actually go to these locations, correct?
Right. Yeah, we weren't able to go to China. So as a reporting challenge, it wasn't easy. We had to find a way to get to people who had firsthand knowledge of what was going on in the camps. So we did kind of what we do. We just talked to everybody we could possibly think of and use different ways to try to figure out who some of these people were. The academies had existed since 2016. So there were a number of people. Early on, the NBA inevitably figured out what we were trying to do. And so then the league officials began to tell personnel, current and former coaches, they encouraged them not to speak with us. And so that created a whole other layer of difficulty for us. And it was just something we had to work around. And I think that what helped us really was that the people who did agree to talk to us really loved the NBA and were appalled by what the NBA had gotten itself into and seemingly was unwilling to get out of. And they were wanting to highlight it because they felt like it was important that people know. And I think also they felt like, at least some of them, there was a sort of some level of hypocrisy involved because the NBA has been so progressive around social justice issues in the United States. And yet here was a situation where the human rights abuses are so self-evident and have been so widely reported and have been criticized by everyone from the U.S. government to the United Nations to the largest human rights organizations in the world. And the NBA is essentially saying, you know, not our problem. I mean, you had at least two coaches who changed their positions, were transferred from their positions or moved their positions because they were upset about what was going on. One guy left early because the lack of schooling in the academy that he was working in, he just found it appalling and he didn't want to be part of it. And then another coach had witnessed the Chinese coaches striking players that were under his responsibility. And he didn't want to be part of that. So he asked to be transferred to another position where he wouldn't be in the middle of that.
What was the NBA's response when you went to them with your findings?
You know, I have to say, I've been done a lot of stories like this, and often, I would say, usually, the reaction is defensive and you know, sort of circling the wagons. That was not the case with the league. They immediately owned these problems, mostly. We had extensive conversations with their public relations office, and we interviewed Mark Tatum at length about basically every question under the sun that we had. The one thing I would say is that, of course, among the questions that we asked were, why did you? So I don't think we've touched on this, but the NBA has closed the academy in Xinjiang. They closed it last year, although there's some dispute over when exactly it was closed. They closed it, but they hadn't announced it. But they disclosed it in a letter to Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee about a week or two ago. And it didn't make much news. And, you know, they were trying to keep it quiet. And so we asked, you know, what role did human rights play in the decision to close that academy? And we asked that question, I would say, like a half dozen different ways. And we just could not get Mark Tatum to engage on that question. You know, they just did not want to touch the issue of human rights. And, you know, you can understand why, right? They're already in a really difficult situation with, you know, the fallout from Maury's tweet, which continues.
So the Xinjiang camp has been closed. What's the status of the other two camps?
The two other academies, Shandong and Zhejiang, they're open, but because of the pandemic, they're not operating, as what we were told by the league. But the league told us Mark Tatum told us almost off the top that they are now reevaluating the entire academy program, in large part because they're realizing how little oversight they had over the academies. I think that's a big deal. You know, when they announced this, although I think they're downplaying it now, this is not a small initiative. It received quite a bit of attention, and the NBA was quite proud of it. And to sort of now saying we're at least considering scrapping the whole thing because we didn't feel like we had oversight over the Chinese government, it's not a small thing. I think what it sounds like to me is that, you know, the pandemic has given them some time to begin to kind of figure out where they want to go with this. And yeah, we'll just have to see what happens with those other two academies, or whether they replace the one that they've already disengaged from. You know, we just don't know at this point.
So at the beginning, you described this as a $5 billion enterprise. The Maury tweet has been reported to have been a nine-figure kind of a hit alone. Do you think there is a world where the NBA actually reevaluates its desire to do business with China?
No, I don't. I don't. The Academy program is a small part of what is a huge enterprise over there. The NBA is enormous over there. It's hard for me to imagine what it would take for the NBA to pull out entirely. I suppose there could be a time when the human rights situation becomes so grave that everybody begins to take stock. But if, you know, putting a million people into camps is not it, I'm not sure what it would be. It, you know, as we said in the story, you know, it really spotlighted how complicated this relationship is. As long as the NBA is in China, and as long as the Chinese government is operating the way it does and has the kind of relationship that it has with the United States, which is obviously extremely contentious right now, that, you know, we're going to be hearing so much more about this.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us. This is really important work.
Oh, I really appreciate it, Paolo. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, one of the strongest voices in the NBA on the words he wishes he could take back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
One final note on today's show. Uyghur is spelled U-I-G-H-U-R. So on the most basic level, I do understand how complicated this whole China story still might seem. But it should now be obvious why understanding what's happening here is actually imperative, especially if you're an NBA player or a coach, and especially if you avoided discussing China back when Daryl Morey tweeted free Hong Kong, thus resulting in some of the league's most incisive social commentators giving some of the most awkward commentary I can recall. I mean, LeBron basically told Morey to stick to sports.
Understand that what you could tweet or could say, and we all talk about this freedom of speech. Yes, we all do have freedom of speech, but at times there are ramifications for the negative that can happen. When you're not thinking about others and you're only thinking about yourselves.
And this was Steve Kerr.
It's a really bizarre international story, and a lot of us don't know what to make of it. So it's something I'm reading about, and just like everybody is, but I'm not going to comment further than that.
Now, last week, to Kerr's credit, he told the Washington Post, quote, "I handled it really poorly. That's the one episode where I walked away shaking my head saying, what the hell was that?" End quote. And look, for people like LeBron and Steve Kerr, there are dangers here. Bad faith critics are using police brutality in Hong Kong to silence black voices. Black voices who are criticizing police brutality in America. All of it turning "What about China?" into a bizarro "What about Chicago?" And it's also true that justice for Americans is deeply personal to the NBA, which genuinely wants to affect domestic change. But if you are profiting off of China in the ways that Steve Fainaru describes in today's show, then this whole story is deeply personal to you, more personal than you may have even realized. And so, yes, it is worth learning how to spell Uyghur. And it's worth learning how to say that name, too. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.